Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power and we shine a light on the path ahead of us to where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right front and center to face the music and dance together and address problems together rather than merely defend positions. Today, our guest on Wiki Politiki is author and visionary economist David Corton. David Corton's life and work can probably be summed up in the quote that he uses on his website, quote, "We will prosper in the pursuit of life, or we will perish in the pursuit of money. The choice is ours." Now, David spent more than 35 years in the field of international business development until he had an epiphany and recognized he had been in the service of what he calls the global suicide economy. He turned his focus to what he calls transition to an ecological civilization, and you may know him through his many books that shed light on the underlying causes of our economic new word situation and points us toward solutions. So his books include When Corporations Rule the World, The Post-Corporate World, Life After Capitalism, The Great Turning from to Earth for a New Economy from Phantom Wealth to Real Wealth, and his most recent book, Change the Story, Change the Future, A Living Economy for a Living Earth. David is also the co-founder of Yes Magazine and founder of the Living Economies Forum. We're in for a very enlightening conversation. So welcome, David.
Great to be on your show, Steve. Good. I love the conversation to bring the left and the right together, looking for solutions to our shared dilemmas. So that's terrific.
Well, yes. Yeah, so much of our conversation and energy has been diverted to the battlefield. You know, fighting a mock sword fight on the deck of the Titanic. So we're actually going to be looking at the Titanic and the Titanic crisis we have. Speaking of the word crisis, I read somewhere that the word was originally a term applied to surgery, that it was the point in the wake of a surgery, it was the life or death moment where the patient either recovered or didn't. So maybe that term is more pertinent than we might imagine, as we face both economic and ecological crises that threaten civilization and perhaps human life. So, David, how would you describe where we are now?
Well, I think I'd call it a choice point. I'm quite fascinated currently by the term that the Chinese are using, that we need to make a transition to an ecological civilization. And I, in my book, The Great Turning from Empire to Earth Community, it's basically, putting the story in the bigger picture. For some 5,000 years, we humans have been organizing around empire, which basically is a system of top-down control. The command and control structures, but the control and exploitation of the many and Earth by the few. It used to be kings and emperors, in our more recent history, we've transitioned to the flirtation with democracy. But as democracy has come into being, the imperial structures have shifted over to financial markets and corporations. And so, in a way, we're still playing out that the basic frameworks of that imperial civilization. And now we've come to the point where we've reached the limits of exploitation that Earth and our social structures will sustain. And we either move ahead toward collapse, including possible even extinction of the species, or we move in a very different direction. And I love the name that the Chinese have chosen, the ecological civilization, because I think that really captures it. Recognizing, at least as I would describe it, recognizing that we are beings of a living Earth, and the Earth organizes the whole community of life, organizes to create the conditions on this planet that are distinctive in all the solar system, and so far as we know yet, distinctive in the larger universe. And that has huge implications for how we learn to live together, to share resources, and so forth. And that's the challenge we currently face as a species.
Well, you're absolutely right about context. Largely unconscious context, largely unconscious, because we certainly have paid lip service to the idea of the golden rule and we're all in this together and so on. But some of these historical habits that have persisted through education, through spiritual education, and so on, have brought us to the point where we are now. I want to go back a little bit, because you have had the experience in your lifetime of really being part of that economic system. And I would imagine that when you first started your career, you thought that you were doing the right thing. So why don't we look a little bit at you know, what your work has been in your early part of your career, and then the turning point for you that caused you to change direction toward this ecological civilization.
Yeah, that actually goes back to my upbringing. I grew up in a small town. My dad was a businessman, a music and appliance store, and I assumed that was going to be my life, too, as the oldest son, to take that over and run that store in Longview, Washington. And I grew up in terms of your left-right arrangement, I grew up as a very conservative young Republican, and I was very concerned about the communist revolutions that were threatening our American way of life. So at one point, I made a decision that rather than coming back and running the store, I would devote my life to bringing the secrets of U.S. business success to the poor countries of the world. And by the time I made that decision, I was already lined up to go to business school. But it all seemed to make perfect sense. I would get my graduate business education. I would then go off and share what I learned in business school, and everybody in the world could become rich, happy consumers like us, and we would end this revolution nonsense. So I spent only part of the time, you know, really as part of what most people would think of as the corporate establishment, but that included teaching for a few years at the Harvard University, the Harvard Business School. So I was really right at the academic heart of the capitalist system there for a time. But my focus was, you know, was less on the corporate system, financial markets as such, but rather what could we teach people in low-income countries that would help them better control the resources in their businesses. And I was basically, my life was organized around this international development frame for some 30 years. So I'm, you know, as I look back on it, I'm kind of a slow learner. But I became aware over time that what we were promoting in terms of economic development, economic growth around the world, instead of lifting people up to prosperity, what it was doing was creating more and more environmental crises, destroying the forests, destroying the fisheries, destroying the fertility of the lands, and that people who had lived off the land, who had, essentially been self-reliant in growing their food and organizing as communities, were being thrust off the land, off their communities, being driven away from the self-reliance and self-control into dependence on, sweatshop jobs or roaming in search of work as landless agricultural workers and so forth. And it's very curious because, they were making more money, which economists take to be the measure of economic progress, but their lives were actually more difficult. In many ways, their health suffered. Certainly, they lost their happiness. Their communities, their cultures were being destroyed, and that put me on a path to trying to figure out what's gone wrong here. Why is this working so badly and so contrary to what we are taught about the processes of economic progress? And then, of course, that ultimately led to the question of and what is the alternative? First of all, we work on that at a more micro level in terms of people getting control of the resources and so forth. But ultimately, it came to be a focus on what does this mean for how we organize as a species? And that then leads into these very large frames of the choice point of humanity. That, what I was observing in these low-income countries was actually a global phenomenon, and connected in increasingly with what was happening as we became a global species. That we may have to pick up after the break.
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting. You're coming of age and beginning your career right around the time of John Kennedy's administration and Alliance for Progress and the Peace Corps and the entire idea of peacefully competing with the Soviet Union and showing them that we actually have a better system. And so I could totally understand where you were at that point and imagining that what you grew up around in a small town America could be exported to other countries. And so what you found is that actually the promise was not the same. It was kind of similar to what John Perkins discovered in his book on the economic hitman, that all of a sudden these things that you imagined would be very positive ended up simply being other pathways for exploitation. So what was it that made you turn the corner and turn towards something else and leave that world? And then what did you think you could accomplish by leaving that and doing something else?
Well, it was actually very, very gradual in some ways. But it's also a very interesting observation on how we get connected into a system and find it very difficult to really understand the impact of that system. And I say this in terms of for most of the time I was working in international development, I was working for organizations at the heart of the foreign aid system. including for a number of years. I worked as the Asia Regional Advisor on Development Management for the United States Agency for International Development, our major foreign aid program. And I look back with astonishment that the kind of breakthrough in my recognition of how the foreign aid system itself was driving this process of destroying people's control of their own lands and lives and economies. About 2 weeks after I drew my last check from the foreign aid system as, as essentially an employee of the system, that all the time that I was actually working in the system, I was never able to see what suddenly popped into my mind 2 weeks after I took my last check. I think that's kind of had a lot of impact on my thinking about how we get caught up in these situations and how, and the extent to which we get caught up in stories about, you know, in that case, it was the story of economic progress and, increasing incomes and so forth, which draws our attention away from the fact that we are living beings, and the fact that money is itself nothing but a number. It's a mental construct. You think about it, it's pretty obvious that most of our money is nothing but numbers in a computer hard drive, and yet we organize our whole global civilization now around growing those numbers. It's kind of the ultimate stupidity. Now, some people would say, yeah, we really should be on a gold standard, so it's something solid. But, gold really isn't worth much more in reality than the piece of paper that we print our numbers on that we hand to the cashier at the grocery store. You can't eat it. You can't drink it. Not going to keep you warm in the winter.
We're going to be back with David Corton after the break and talk about maybe the golden standard instead of the gold standard. Steve Behrman, WikiPolitiki. We'll be back after this break.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family, and then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day. People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything. I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Well, we're back with Wiki Politiki and David Corton. We were talking about the difference between money and well-being, and we've had this program, perhaps, or certainly a story that associates having money with well-being. And of course, certainly, you do need financial resources, particularly in this society, to survive and thrive. But obviously, in looking at these third world countries, that while the paychecks were growing, the quality of life seemed to be slipping away. Is that, that seems to be what you were saying.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me when I look back on it how kind of self-evident these things are. But what I realized at a deeper level, if you want to take control of the world, take control of people's lives, what you want to do is get them dependent on these numbers we call money, and then make them dependent on you for access to those numbers. And that is kind of the crux of our current situation, that we've moved to an economy where, you know, and this is also part of the transition that's taken place within our lifetimes, where we have become a truly global species with our global communications. But it has allowed these systems to globalize. So we now have a system in which fewer and fewer people are controlling our access to money. At the same time, they control the actual land, the water, the actual resources, even the housing and the technology and everything that we depend on for our daily life depends on money. So as an individual, our lives become increasingly totally dependent on access to that money that this ever smaller group of people controls. And that becomes our problem. So then we become convinced by the stories the economists tell us that, you know, if we can just grow GDP, which is really about growing those numbers and growing the what I call the monetization of our relationship, so that we depend more and more on money for everything that we do, it increases that control, which is ever is continuously concentrated in the hands of fewer and fewer people. And we never quite step back and realize that while, you know, money is absolutely essential to my ability to exist the way things are currently organized, for a society growing those numbers, it's pointless. And I, you know, I often think about this in terms of the idea of you know, our Social Security locked up in a lockbox someplace, which Al Gore talked about. But in fact, you know, those numbers, the reserves are are numbers on a computer hard drive. So you kind of think of this, that our wealth is on a computer hard drive. It's locked up in a bank vault someplace, and it's spurring out these numbers, and they're growing. We say, wow, we're getting richer and richer. And then the day comes when, you know, we need access to food, to housing, to water, to a stable climate and so forth. And we open up that computer and we look in that computer hard drive and we can't even see the numbers. And we suddenly realize, wow, those numbers for society are basically worthless. If we don't have a healthy environment, if we don't have a community of people that are looking out for each other and each other's needs, we're just stuck. And in fact, what we are doing as a species is destroying community, destroying family, destroying Earth's capacity to support life, And we're growing these numbers. And, the main thing, the most important thing that's growing is the fortunes of billionaires. So, we now have billionaires getting up in the $100 billion framework. And, we're told by Forbes magazine and the evening news and so forth, isn't this great? We're getting richer and richer. The whole thing I think of it as deception, but I'm not even sure. I don't know that the people who are actually doing it have any idea, in fact, what they're doing, because they too live in a kind of bubble within this story. That is telling them that you are improving humanity. You're creating the wealth that is improving the lives of people everywhere and advancing the human species toward higher levels of evolution. So this is why I talk about we need to change the story and change the future.
It's self-deception. Yeah.
Yeah, it is self-deception, and the key is if we wake up, well, we first of all have to wake up to kind of how this works, change the story around which we organize, and then get on with the business of actually creating a world that maintains a healthy Earth, strong communities, strong families, and allows us to come into balance with one another, and share the beauty of Earth, the Earth's capacity to create the conditions essential to the health of all life, including human life.
It has to do with I love the idea that your concept, the monetization of our relationships, because that's really what's been going on in our lifetime. That old cliche, the best things in life are free, not anymore. And none of those digital figures or even the actual slips of paper are edible. I want to go back to perhaps you're familiar with an economist from the 1930s and 40s named Carl Wilken. He was an agrarian economist who said that all new wealth comes from the soil. And what he figured out during the 30s at that time, that the national income was seven times the farm income, that there was a multiplier. And before the Depression, after the Depression, the farmers were producing pretty much the same amount of food. Mm-hmm. However, once the Depression hit, the farm income for the same food with the same caloric value was half of the farm income prior to the Depression. And so he created something called parity economics, where farmers were guaranteed a minimum market price, recognizing that wealth does come from the soil, renewable wealth, actual wealth, something that people can eat, something that they could turn into clothing, something that they can turn into fuel, perhaps. These things come from the earth as renewable resources, not so much the forest, not so much the fossil fuels, but, for example, something like industrial hemp, which has been illegal to grow in this country for 80 years. And interestingly enough, your entire lifetime, we've not had hemp. And the point being that if we want to look at what real value is, it's in this renewable wealth. It's from the energy from the sun and the food that comes from the earth. And our economy has gotten so far away from that. And so perhaps you've started to answer my next question, which is, it looks like we've had one opportunity after another. For example, since you wrote your book, When Corporations Rule the World, and you're all of these really hugely valuable books that have talked about what the condition is and perhaps ways for us to change the story. It seems like we've had one opportunity after another, and we've continually missed these opportunities. Why would you say we've missed those opportunities to make these shifts and changes to the point now we're at the dire situation?
Well, it's interesting, your story about Carl Wilken, that in a way he recognized the fallacy and the contradiction. I'm actually not directly familiar with his work, but if I follow what you're saying, he was essentially trying to revise the GDP figures by which we evaluate economic progress. Now, the fallacy in there is trying to measure our economic progress by financial indicators. That's where we get off base. We've really got to step back and recognize that money's just a tool. It is not the purpose of the economy. So then you ask, what are the real measures of this successful economic performance? Well, you take it down to basics, and it's a lot easier to see this if you've never taken an economics course. The more economics courses you've taken, the harder it is to see it. But the real measure of economic success is it keeping Earth healthy? So are the soils improving in their fertility? Are we maintaining Earth's ability to create supplies of fresh water, to maintain the stability of the climate, and on and on and on, all the things that the Earth we have been born into does in its natural processes. Then we come around to the human side and realize, it's not about money, but how are people doing in terms of, do people have access to healthy food? And, maybe they grow it, maybe they get it in the market or whatever, but it makes a whole lot less importance where they get it than the fact that they are getting it. And that it is quality food. It's not the garbage processed food that we become increasingly reliant on. Do they have ready access to supplies of clean water? Is their environment beautiful? Are their lives organized in ways that they are able to meet their needs for living in ways that actually strengthen our relationships with one another, our relationships of community and family, our sense of connection to nature and to the land, which is all part of essential to our spiritual development and fulfillment. And if those things are happening, then it means the economy is working. And whether this artificial construct that economists have created called gross domestic product, whether that's going up, down, or sideways, is ultimately totally irrelevant. To me, the only financial indicators that are of any real use are the indicators of the degree of equality or inequality in the society. And those the economists tend to play down. We don't talk about that. That's not really important. And it's within that piece where we really go off base, and we get our attention focused on the financial numbers, and we lose sight of what the economy is actually doing to us. And
it's actually what it's providing or not providing.
Yeah, I mean, within recent years, GDP growth is basically best thought of as an indicator of the speed at which we're destroying Earth's capacity to sustain life, to grow the fortunes of billionaires. those are the two things that actually correlate most closely with economic growth. And yet that is not part of our common story and common understanding, and certainly not what we hear on the evening business news.
Well, what you've said earlier, I mean, certainly the story makes a difference. And in the last segment of our show, we'll talk more about the story and things that might make that shift happen. But, you know, basically, as you've talked about, the concentration of wealth into fewer and fewer hands, it also means the concentration of the power to change or not change into fewer hands.
Yes, absolutely.
So,
the recent report from Oxfam notes that the financial assets of the world's 62 richest people now equal to the total financial assets of the poorest half of humanity. So that's 62 people versus 3.7 billion people. So you can ask how much inequality is too much. And the report also notes that in 2017, 82% of the growth in financial assets, that would be growth in financial wealth, went to the world's richest 1%. None of it went to the world's poorest 50%. And, of course, what we should be, to the extent we're talking about money and income, but particularly financial assets and control of financial assets, we should be focused on is it becoming more equal? Is the majority of the benefit going to the poorest 50% who most need it? And in fact, it's going in exactly the opposite direction. And now, Jeff Bezos is the richest man in the world, and we begin to get estimates of his wealth as, somewhere up of $110 billion to $120 billion. It's just amazing. In a few hours or days' time, his wealth will go up or down by a few billion dollars. That's just craziness.
Well, it shows how ridiculous those figures are because, again, none of those dollars are edible. But we'll be back in a few minutes to talk about where we can go from here. This is Steve Bierman. I'm talking with David Korten on WikiPolitiki.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Barry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network, presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the WikiPolitiki sponsors page.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life, I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Well, this is Steve Behrman. We're back on WikiPolitiki with David Corton, and we're going to take this last segment. I'm going to ask a whole number of questions, and we're going to have the conversation about these questions. What will move us forward now in this time of crisis? And what's different that's actually going to move the dial at this point to shift the story and shift how those people who hold the resource that we have can shift that resource? And finally, what is the role of China? You know, China came up with this great concept, this great context. Can China be a leader in this next period of time? So I'm going to let you loose, David.
Okay. Yes. A few big frames there. Well, first of all, getting our context right. We currently, as a species, are consuming at 1.7 times what Earth can sustain. So the rest of that extra consumption is destroying Earth's capacity to support life. At the same time, we still have a majority of the world's people who are, you know, are just struggling to barely get by. So we need to move forward with a concept that our challenge, our goal, is to create a world, an economy, in which the basic, every individual is able to meet the basic material needs of a decent, good life, but not in the sense of the conspicuous consumer culture, but rather within the mode of the voluntary simplicity movement. So we're focused on, again, material sufficiency, but obtaining and using that sufficiency in a way that brings us spiritual abundance, happiness, pleasure, love, beauty, all the things that are consistent with a healthy, natural environment. Now, you know, this is about getting our story right. I say now, hold on here. I don't want to shock you too badly, but the fundamental truth of the matter is that we humans are living beings born of and nurtured by a living Earth. So, are you shocked? Well, it turns out most people aren't really shocked.
You know, it's like, oh my God, that's right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And now, of course, you know, the singularity folks will send us to Mars, right? We'll be able to colonize Mars while we turn this planet into, you should excuse the expression, Uranus. You know, so that's where those people are going. You know, we're all going to abandon this planet and go to Mars. So we're going to actually not take that route.
Yeah, it's totally extraordinary, this about going to Mars. And of course, you know, Mars has no drinkable water or breathable air or soil that will grow our food. So,
hey, we'll turn our planet into Mars. That's right.
Yeah, good luck.
We don't need to go to Mars. Journey. Let's turn our planet into Mars.
Yeah. You know, I just read this article about, you know, Jeff Bezos and his investments in space tourism, and you know, he's talking about populating the solar system with a trillion people. Well, my goodness, you know, there's not another planet in the solar system that has anywhere near the conditions to support human life. I mean, well, it's very strange. I would suggest to him that our first challenge is to figure out how to live in balance with, improve the capacity of this planet to support life, and maybe in the process, we will come to understand how it is that life on planet Earth managed to organize to create conditions here that are unique, so far as we know so far, not only in the solar system, but within the entire universe, which has many billions, trillions of solar systems. But that is our challenge. How do we live with this Earth? Now, as we begin to understand how life organizes, which is the key, and you referred to me as an economist. I actually consider that an insult because economists don't
I didn't mean to insult you.
Yeah, you're forgiven. Honest mistake. What we need to learn from are the ecological sciences and learning how life organizes, including how, everything from the cells in our body to how the organisms that populate Earth, how they organize together and relate to Earth's geological structures in ways that create these conditions on Earth essential to the existence of life as we know it. And, so far as we can figure out, the thing that makes Earth distinctive in the cosmos are these self-organizing living systems to which all productive organisms contribute. And that puts us into the frame then of asking the question of, well, what is really our human role in this much larger scheme of creation that in the whole is continuously organizing toward ever greater complexity, beauty, awareness, and possibility? And, our relation to Earth has become one of like an invasive species that is purely expropriating, and we have to shift our whole relationship to one of Earth healers, Earth caretakers, recognizing the extent of our dependence on Earth's living systems. So, I mean, the implications are huge, but it takes us back to the need to create local economies in which people are organizing locally to meet their essential material needs for housing, food, water, and so forth, and where we all have this natural interest in and incentive to make sure that these self-generating systems, regenerating systems, are healthy and not only stopping the damage, but supporting the recovery, and perhaps even with time, learning how to make Earth as a whole even more productive and more beautiful than it is in its natural state. It's a remarkable challenge. It's a very invigorating challenge once you get into it. But it also becomes very daunting when we realize how far we are in our current organization and our current conceptions, even our current understanding, from where we need to be. But that is the challenge of our time. And that's where I get interested in the Chinese, who have this extraordinary experience that there was the time when they turned to Russia for communism, and in a way they became the most faithful country in the world in terms of implementing communism as it was understood. And it turned out they found out it didn't really work that well. It wasn't doing much for workers. It wasn't creativity. It wasn't meeting their needs in the way they wanted. So then they turned to the United States and they said, well, let's try capitalism. And so they tried capitalism, and now they're creating billionaires at a rate of two per week. So from that standpoint, they're very successful. They are growing their economy quite rapidly, setting global records. But the majority of their people are stuck in a dead end. They're forced into jobs that are debilitating, that are low paid, that separate them from their families, and reduce them to essentially a condition of servitude. And in the major cities in China, you know, the breathing the air is basically life-threatening. It's the environmental damage has really got their attention. So they're beginning to awaken to the fact that this capitalism's not really working all that well either. And it's interesting, they have such a capacity as a huge nation to rally around frameworks. But what I see in the work that the meetings and so forth, and the conversations with folks who are part of thinking this through, there is no existing model. When you start talking about a civilizational shift, and I see it as a shift from imperial civilization to an ecological civilization, it is a move toward a civilization grounded in cooperation, in recognition of the importance of the health of a living Earth. And it is different in fundamentally every way from our existing civilization and existing economy. And it requires that as a species we go where no human has actually been before. So it becomes a tremendously creative challenge. And China has such capacity beyond that of any other country in the world to take a problem or take an idea and approach it on a national scale. At the same time, it is extremely undemocratic, and it is moved very far away from the kinds of local control of resources and objectives and working with Earth and one another that we're coming to recognize as essential to the civilizational shift we must now navigate. So, where exactly this goes is hard to tell, and China is now very much caught up in the forces between the groups and the thinking that are trying to reach into this new civilization, the psychological civilization, and the interests of the billionaires and the interests that are aligned with continuing the current path of environmental destruction and concentration of wealth, which they, of course, don't describe in those terms, but that is, in fact, what the alternative is. One leading toward potential extinction of the species, and the other leading to a new human future of beauty and innovation and cooperation and love and life. This really captures for me the choice that we as a species now must make.
What a fascinating idea. It sounds like they're very adept at adapting and adopting other systems. And so it's heartening for the relocalization movement in this country, the permaculture, the natural agriculture, et cetera, that may take hold over in China, because they can make because they're not democratic particularly, they can make fundamental systemic changes more rapidly than we can, should they decide they want to make that change.
Yes, they also have the advantage that corporations have not yet come into total control of the government. as they have in most other countries. And, you know, this is another fundamental truth we have to come to terms with. We have moved increasingly to a world in which the global corporations, global or transnational corporations, have greater power than the governments, or in a way, because they increasingly control the governments. And, of course, we can see that so clearly in the United States currently. You know, democracy has become increasingly a facade here. It's really controlled by big money interests and by corporations and their use of things like trade agreements, which are negotiated between countries by corporations, essentially, all to shift the rules in the direction of greater corporate control of real resources and of money, and freed from any rules that hold them accountable to a public interest. You know, China is moving in that direction, but it has not yet succumbed to that level of corporate control and corporate rule. So it still has the ability to do what the rest of us find extraordinarily difficult.
Wow, what a way to end with David Corton here looking across the world at China as a possible beacon of light. A lot of, as we used to say when I lived in Texas, grits for the mill in this conversation with David Corton. Thank you so much, David, for joining us on WikiPolitiki.
Been a great pleasure.
Thank you. We'll be back again next week. This is Steve Behrman, WikiPolitiki, bringing left and right, front and center. Lift the veils, see the light. Thank you.